Welcome to Defining Moments, a program in which we get to know prominent people personally as they share the significant events, insights, relationships, and values of their lives. Defining Moments is brought to you on Christian Talk 660 by American Leprosy Mission, an international Christian ministry headquartered in Greenville, South Carolina. Defining Moments aims to build up the body of Christ by making its leaders better known to all of us. And now, here's your host for Defining Moments, Bob Smith.
Thank you for joining us for Defining Moments. Today we'll get to know Tom Preston, leader of Campus Crusade for Christ in Greenville, South Carolina, in the northwest corner of the state, what South Carolinians call the Upstate. Tom has led six international Campus Crusade ministries in his long crusade career. Tom, thank you very much for sharing your life with us today. We're anxious to hear about it, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Bob. I'm delighted to be with you.
Defining Moments is about your life, actually, but tell us a little bit about Campus Crusade for Christ first.
Okay. Campus Crusade was started in 1951 by Bill and Vonette Bright on the campus at UCLA. It was a ministry designed to win, build, and send students who would become the future leaders in America. It quickly spread to other campuses and then to various segments of the adult population, and then began to multiply overseas. And today, Campus Crusade has over 25,000 full-time staff in over 190 countries. My Brenda and I joined staff of Executive Ministries, which is one part of Campus Crusade, in 1982. We worked here in Greenville for several years, then helped launch an international version of that ministry to business leaders and government leaders around the world, and returned to U.S. ministry after that. And for the last 3 years, have been working here mostly in Greenville, helping fulfill not only our Campus Crusade direct ministry role, but also trying to help establish and strengthen partnerships between Campus Crusade, churches, and other evangelical ministries as well.
Thank you. It's a wonderful ministry. I'm sure you'll tell us a bit more about it later. Now, for the next hour, we're going to imagine that you've been given a fully paid sabbatical for as long as it takes to write your autobiography. You'll be alone in a beautiful and comfortable but very remote mountain cabin that we call Scribbler's Den. It has a great cook and a housekeeper, but no TV, no telephone, no email, no internet. It's got a word processing computer and dictation software and a printer, plenty of pencils and paper. You might even enjoy a little solitude once in a while. Huh?
I do indeed.
To help you organize your memories, we're going to ask you to recall the defining moments of your life, those events, insights, the people, decisions, mistakes that have shaped you and changed your direction, helped you, constrained you, attracted you, been your best accomplishments, most affected others, things like that. For your spare time, you'll want to take some of your favorite books and music or other recordings, and we'd like to know what those are. Last, you can have two visitors from the past. We'll want to know who you'll choose and what you want to talk to them about. Sound like fun?
It does indeed, especially the part about the remote cabin in the mountains.
Yeah. Okay. And we all have one defining moment in common, our birth. Tell us about yours. When, where, your parents, grandparents, so on.
Well, I was born and raised in Startex, South Carolina. It's a small textile mill village in Spartanburg County, not too far from here in Greenville. In many ways, I had an ideal childhood. We didn't have a lot of extras, but we weren't poor. My parents were, it almost sounds like storybook parents. My memories of my childhood are great. My parents loved each other and loved me. I had two older sisters who were good to me. And now that I'm much older, I appreciate also how much my parents loved the Lord, though I must admit, when I was a kid, most of what that meant to me was that I had to go to church more than I wanted to. But most of my childhood memories are very positive. Playing little league sports, swimming. Our vacation every year, at least one vacation every year, was to Texas to visit relatives where both my parents had grown up.
What was your earliest memory or your favorite early memory?
When I was 7 years old, a local milk company, it was Foremost Milk, ran a contest, and if you could get the letters out of milk cartons to spell the word Foremost, then you could win a brand new Roadmaster bike. And one of the letters, they only printed a few of them, but I got them all, and I won this shiny new bicycle that I could barely get on. And then a special bonus is I went for an interview on the radio about being a winner of this big bicycle.
Oh, great. Tell us about your primary education. Where did you start to school?
Well, I went to Startex Elementary, and I enjoyed those years. They were simple years, and I was a fairly good student. And most of my memories related to elementary school were very positive.
Any special teachers that you remember?
Well, actually, my first grade teacher, Mrs. Boyder, was my favorite. And then way beyond anything I could imagine, I would never have dreamed by the time I finished second grade, she stopped teaching first grade and went to third grade, so I had her twice. And so I got a double dose of Mrs. Boyder. And she was special. She thought I was special, or made me think I was special.
Do you have any special friends in school?
Just 4 or 5 kids that I grew up with. Actually went from first grade all the way through high school with a few guys, and still have contact with a few of them today.
What about early books? What was the first book you read, or what about favorite movies or TV programs?
I really didn't read much except what I had to read when I was a kid. It was later in high school and in college that I really started becoming an avid reader. But I really don't remember anything that I read when I was a kid other than Dick and Jane and Spot and a few required children's classics that I had to read. But most of my memories like that related to my childhood involved people like Gene Autry and Roy Rogers and Sky King on Saturday mornings.
Okay. What about sports?
Loved and still do love basketball. I was better at baseball, but I really loved basketball. That was just a phenomenal sport. I had a problem, though, as it related to me. I couldn't jump, but I tried to make up for that by being slow, but that didn't seem to work either. And I really wasn't a good shot, but other than that, I kind of had basketball conquered.
Okay. Did you play musical instruments or sing or anything?
Actually, I was told that I could get paid not to sing, so I try to refrain from that.
Did you have any other passions in your preteen years?
Mostly, other than just athletics, I really like sports and everything, but most of my other passions, I think, would be, some people would call them obsessions. I'm just really good with numbers and organization. And when I was a little kid, I was so organized that I used to drive my older sisters crazy. They would tell my parents to please stop making me, or please make me stop counting my money and putting money into envelopes. I had this system when I was 7 years old that I sorted my money out and I saved up for this and saved up for that. I used to drive my sisters nuts. But I just always had this penchant for numbers and for organization.
Wow. What would you say was your next defining moment?
Probably Mrs. Ruby Barnett. She was a teacher in the 8th grade, and she told me that I could do anything I wanted to in life, that I was special, and that I really could make something of myself. And I think I really began to believe her at some point. And her husband was my shop teacher that same year. And both of the Barnetts are friends of ours to this day. They're alive and well, and we keep in contact and just love them dearly.
Great. I hope they're listening. Scribbler's Den has a player for every kind of audio and video recording. It even has an 8-track player. And you can take a few recordings with you, music, recorded voice, or video. If you could take just one, what would it be?
Sarah Brightman, we have a video concert of Sarah Brightman I would probably take.
Okay.
Saw her, first time Brendan and I saw her, she was playing Christina in Phantom of the Opera. And her voice is just phenomenal. Love to listen to her, love to watch her.
She said it is beautiful. We're going to hear just a little bit of that right now. Robert Brightman from Phantom of the Opera. Now we're going to take our first break. We appreciate our sponsors so much, and their message is really important. When we come back, we'll talk about your early teen years and a book that you'd like to take to Scribbler's Den.
Hello, I'm Chris Doyle, president of American Leprosy Mission. I want to tell you the story of a young man from Angola that suffered from one of the most frightening diseases known to man, leprosy. Carlos came from a poor family in the city of Huambo. After completing high school, he became a school teacher and enjoyed that work for 12 years. Then suddenly he began to feel terrible pain in his legs, and nodules began to appear on his face and ears, making him look terrible. First, he spent a lot of money on traditional treatments and also in the hospitals of the Huambo area. However, the disease continued to worsen. It was then that a friend told him to go to the Kalakembe Hospital, and so he did. When the doctors saw him, they told him the devastating news. He had leprosy. He broke down and cried bitterly. But thankfully, the nurses and doctors cheered him up and told him that he needed to have faith in the great physician, the Lord Jesus Christ, because he cures us on the inside and the outside. Carlos stayed at the hospital for 5 years and was finally discharged as a cured patient. His testimony is that he was cured not only in his body, but in his soul. Even though he was baptized as a child, he was far from God. As he was following the treatment, he started to study the Bible. As a result of the Bible study, God transformed his life. He was baptized in the chapel just outside the hospital in the leprosy village. In his own words, Carlos says, "I am happy because Jesus Christ lives in me and also in my family. And I wish to express thanks to all who have, through love and sacrifice, contributed to our having this opportunity as leprosy patients to find a cure in our bodies and in our souls." Through the generous gifts of people like you, Carlos and many others can experience a defining moment in their lives. But there are many others in the world suffering from leprosy. They need your help. Leprosy strikes a new victim every 2 minutes. Please call us at 1-800-LEPROSY or go to our website at leprosy.org. Give a gift today and be a part of a defining moment in the life of a child with leprosy. Please call today, and thanks for caring.
Welcome back to Defining Moments. We're talking with Tom Preston, who is the local leader of Campus Crusade for Christ and has in the past headed up 6 Campus Crusade ministries internationally. Tell us about your middle school years, Tom. Where you lived, your school, home life, whatever.
When I think of middle school, I basically think of two things. One is Mrs. Barnett that I mentioned earlier, and the other is my wife, Brenda. Brenda and I were boyfriend-girlfriend for about 3 months in middle school, and then we went our separate ways for several years.
Did you have jobs back then?
Yes. In fact, I told you I was pretty organized and numbers crazy, and I was also money crazy. But I had jobs off and on from middle school all the way through high school. But one of my favorite jobs I had in the summer following my 8th grade year in school, a friend of my dad's owned a carpet golf place. It was like a putt-putt, but not by that name. And I actually ran that golf course, that little putt-putt golf course, for the whole summer. I opened up every morning, swept the pine needles from all 18 holes, and then I acted as a cashier until time to close.
Great. What's the first book that you'll take that you might want to read or reread while you're up there?
My Utmost for His Highest, Oswald Chambers. I do not equate it with Scripture, but there is a similarity, and that is that every year when I read through that book of his, as simple as it is, it's almost like he's rewritten it that year to fit my life.
It is a great book. Let's talk about high school. Where did you go to high school?
James F. Burns High School in Duncan. I grew up in that area, was still there all the way through high school. I was not their football star back then, I'll assure you.
What were your favorite subjects?
English, math, social studies, history, basically everything except science courses. I detested every science class I was ever forced to endure.
What about foreign languages? Did you study any of those?
Latin. And as strange as that may sound, that was one of my favorite things, at least for 1 year, and has done me well to this day. My teacher then told us all that it would come in handy the rest of our lives, and we thought, how could a dead language do that? But a lot of words in English are derived from Latin, and it actually does come in handy.
It certainly does. What about sports?
Well, I described my basketball skills earlier, so you can guess again that I was not captain of the basketball team. Burns actually had really good teams in those days and didn't seem to need my skills. And mostly, rather than playing sports, I attended to all our sports games and everything, but I worked jobs during high school. I was really interested in making and saving money.
Still had that envelope system?
I had that envelope system intact and polished.
Where did you work?
The two jobs I held for the longest during high school, one was in a local grocery store. I was worked in the produce department of a local grocer. And then I worked for two brothers who owned what at that time was an Esso station.
Right.
People today will know that as Exxon, of course. But right. I worked there, enjoyed that, enjoyed being around cars, and these were two really great guys.
Was Brenda in the picture then?
Brenda and I were still in school together. We went to separate elementary schools, the same middle school, same high school. And about the end of our junior year, we started dating. And then in our senior year, we fell madly in love. And that, coupled with the fact that I thought I was super mature and knew more than most other folks, set me on a rather long and winding road.
Did that road lead to higher education?
It did, in a winding road. I actually had been awarded a four-year scholarship to a college nearby, but then later, during one of the conversations before I went, with the dean of admissions, I was told him that I was planning to get married during my freshman year, and he withdrew the scholarship.
Oh.
I'm not sure they could get away with that today with today's discrimination laws, but they promptly withdrew the scholarship, and so I was kind of left out to dry with that.
Well, how did you then go to college?
Well, my high school principal had a very important role in that. Cryovac, which was then a division of W.R. Grace, was in process of relocating their headquarters to Duncan, South Carolina, which was just down the street from our high school. And our principal called the CFO at Cryovac and told him what had happened about my scholarship loss and my plans to marry, and that I was pretty good with figures and that my SAT score was pretty high. And so he went to bat for me and pulled it off, and I actually graduated from Burns High School on a Friday night and went to work that following Monday morning as a junior cost accountant for Cryovac.
Wow.
And then a couple of months later, in August, I started taking a full load in college at night. And then in September that same year, Brenda and I were married. I was still 17 at the time. I had a full-time job, going to school full-time, and was married. And was still 17 years old. And then 2 years later, actually 2 weeks after my 20th birthday, our first son, Evan, was born.
Wow. Were you still with Cryovac then?
I left Cryovac about that time, and I actually moved from accounting into computer programming. And that's about the time that whole computer industry was starting to explode. And so two more years, I was a programmer for 2 years, a systems analyst with another company for 2 years, and then moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, and took a job as MIS director for a company there when I was 23.
Wow. You really had a full plate in your young adult life, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, and thought I could handle it all.
A young man on the go. What else was in your life at that time?
Well, I tried to make sure everything was that I could imagine. I got really caught up in professional organizations, civic organizations, playing a lot of golf, traveling a lot, and partying a lot, and got involved in a number of other things that were not good.
Mm. Well, it sounds like you don't view that part of your life with great pride now. How long did that last?
About 13 years of that. And after 13 years of marriage and a lot of problems at home, primarily because of my thinking and my lifestyle, I thought everything else seemed to be going well, and I wasn't happy at home, so I just decided to cut my losses and move on. So I told Brenda, after 13 years of marriage, that I wanted a divorce, and she decided not to fight me about it.
Well, did you actually get divorced?
Well, no. As we were getting to the final stages, Brenda took the kids, and we had another son, David, by this time, and she took both of them and went to the beach with a friend of hers, a girlfriend, and her children. And I was at home by myself in Charlotte. For the 2 or 3 months leading up to that, I had been doing some serious thinking on and off about why life wasn't working out the way I thought, because I'd done a lot of planning and goal setting and achieving most things that I had set out to achieve. And so in one way, life was working well, but every time I'd set a goal and achieve it, I felt empty. And the more I did, the emptier I felt. And so I began to think it really not working the way I thought it should. And I realized that weekend, it was on a Friday, in fact, I can remember it clearly, I realized that in a way, going through with that divorce was just another goal. And that if I achieved that goal, it was going to come up empty too. Or I would be empty, and then my family would be gone forever. And so I really started having second thoughts about that.
What did you do then?
Well, I asked myself what was wrong. Why did life feel like a game? I thought life's a game, and I don't know who made up the rules, and there don't seem to be any real winners. And that's when something happened that sounds really strange, but it was very real to me. I was thinking through that, thinking those thoughts. I was actually driving down the street in Charlotte, and I remember saying out loud, "What's wrong? What's missing?" And, of course, there was no audible voice or anything like that. But it was just as real to me as if it had been audible. It was as if God said, "What's wrong is that you don't know me." And that sobered me, to put it mildly. I'd grown up in church way too many times every week, in fact. And I knew about God. I knew about Jesus. I had memorized Bible verses when I was a kid. But that day, when this happened, one of those Bible verses came back to my mind as clearly as if I were reading it for the first time. It was actually John 1:12. "As many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in his name." And I remember it like it was yesterday. I looked down and saw that I had one hand clenched into a fist. And I realized, my first thought was, "What's this?" And I realized I was holding on to my right to control my life. And I knew right then I was faced with a decision. And I remember I was holding the other hand on the steering wheel, mind you. I'm still driving. But I had my hand in a fist. I realized what I was doing. And I just remember opening my hand and just kind of held it up. And I prayed this long, elaborate, deeply theological prayer. I said, "Okay, God, you've got me."
It was great that you knew what to do.
Yeah.
From your upbringing.
That goes back to my parents and their faithfulness in their walk with God and their faithfulness in at least exposing me to the right things about God.
And what did Brenda think of that?
Well, I mentioned she was away. This was on a Friday. She came home on Sunday. This is another very vivid memory. But she came home on Sunday, and I heard the car outside. I went to the door, and I stood there and waited for her to get to the front door. And I met her there, and I said, "Brenda, I don't know exactly what's happened, but I've made some kind of commitment to God, and I don't want to leave, and I don't want a divorce, and I want to spend the rest of my life trying to make you happy." And when she got up, she came in, and this dumbfounded look on her face, and we talked, and she agreed to stay. She really didn't want a divorce anyway. Mostly because of the stigma and the fact that I was a fairly good meal ticket. She tells people now that she didn't want a divorce, but it wasn't because she cared that much about me. But she agreed to stay, and God began to change my life, radically, radically change my life. And by the way, he's still changing it. He has obviously not finished yet. But he brought about some radical changes pretty quickly, and Brenda watched all that happen over about the next 7 months. And partly through that, and just partly through some other things God was doing in her life, enabled her to realize that though she had grown up pretty much the same way I had, believing intellectually the same stuff about God, that she had never come to the point of putting her trust in Christ either. And so about 7 months after I did, she did the same thing.
What were the main things that changed?
God not only put our family back together, but he did it in a way just far beyond anything either of us would ever have imagined. I mean, he taught us a new way of thinking about loving our sons, a new way of thinking about loving each other, gave us a heart for not only each other, but for other people who didn't yet know him, and for marriages. There are a lot of people going through the same kind of struggles that we were and coming to that same point, many of them going through with their divorces and so forth. But there are a lot of those that are salvageable if people can just understand that God cares and what he's capable of doing. So he really gave us a heart for that, for other people who didn't know him and for other marriages that were struggling.
Well, he had a plan for your life for sure, and I'm certainly glad that he got your attention. We'll take another break now for our sponsor, and after that, we'll hear about your first visitor to Scribbler's Den, about the next recording you'll take, and more about your family.
Hello, I'm Chris Doyle, president of American Leprosy Missions. We are proud to sponsor this exciting new radio program, Defining Moments. Leprosy is not a disease that gets much attention anymore. But did you know that every 2 minutes of every day somewhere in the world a person is diagnosed with a new case of leprosy? That is almost 1,000 new cases every day. Many of these cases are precious children. Children like Anna that I met in a hospital in the Philippines. She had been dropped off at the hospital by her parents, and because they were so afraid of leprosy, they never came back to see her. As a parent of four kids, stories like that just break my heart. The good news is that you can make a defining moment in the life of a child like Anna by joining us in delivering the cure for leprosy to children and adults around the world. For over 100 years, ALM has been doing just that, bringing healing and hope in the name of Jesus to those affected by leprosy. Call us today at 1-800-LEPROSY or visit our website at leprosy.org. Thanks for listening and for caring.
You're listening to Defining Moments on Christian Talk 660, serving upstate South Carolina from Greenville, Spartanburg, and Anderson.
Although people in the West do not often encounter leprosy, it is still a common disease in Asia. Let me tell you a moving story. Garud touches people with leprosy every day in West Bengal, India. He isn't afraid. He used to be one of them. Carefully dressing a leprosy patient's wounds, Garud remembers back to a time when he suffered greatly and needed someone to help. He found out that he had the disease when he was just 9 years old. Garud's family lived in poverty, and he had no means to pay for treatment. With his condition quickly deteriorating, Garud met a local church pastor who told him about the power and salvation of Jesus. But he only sneered at the pastor. His family fervently worshipped the traditional gods of their village, and he didn't believe Jesus could make a difference in his life. Several years passed, and Garud was on his deathbed. The leprosy had become so bad it was about to take his life. And it was when he was at his weakest that Garud remembered the words of the pastor who told him how Jesus had healed many people with leprosy. Jesus can heal my sickness, Garud repeated to himself, and a new faith developed in his heart. He had a defining moment. With tears in his eyes, he prayed and asked the Lord for forgiveness. Miraculously, the Lord completely healed Garud of his leprosy in only 2 weeks. Garud dedicated his life to serving Jesus, and soon he entered Bible college to prepare for future ministry. After graduation, Garud began serving as a native missionary, reaching out to those with whom he could most relate, the leprosy patients. Today, he goes around his village helping those with leprosy by cleaning and dressing their wounds. Their eyes light up as he cares for them and touches their disease-stricken bodies. Deeply moved by his acts of kindness, they desire to know the source of his incredible love, and he shares with him his amazing testimony. Many of the leprosy patients have received Jesus as their Savior, and as a result, Garud now leads a Christian fellowship, and more than 80 children are attending Sunday school classes he started in the leprosy colony. You can be a defining moment in the life of someone with leprosy. Call ALM today at 1-800-LEPROSY or go to our website at leprosy.org. Thanks for caring.
Welcome back to Defining Moments. We're talking with Tom Preston, who is the local leader of Campus Crusade for Christ and has in the past headed up six Campus Crusade ministries internationally. Tom Scribbler's den has an amazing device that we call the flux capacitor. We bought it from the producers of the movie Back to the Future. Do you remember seeing that?
Yes, in fact, I do.
And you know it allows time travel in both directions. Now, you're allowed two all-day visitors from the past or the future, if you know anybody there. They'll stay from mid-morning through dinner, so you'll have a long visit. There's just one blackout period, AD 0 through 100.
Okay.
So who would you like to have for your first visitor? And tell us why you've chosen him or her.
Well, I think I'm going to ask William Wilberforce to show up. He would likely be my first choice. There are a lot of things that I will certainly not have in common with him. I'll never hold a position that he held. I'll never make the impact that he made. But William Wilberforce had a philosophy that drove him and it drove his actions that I believe does apply to all of us. And I'd like to explore that with him and ask him some questions about how he dealt with the enormous amount of roadblocks and the rejection that he faced.
Yeah. What a good choice. Would you be sure and ask him what he thinks of Eric Metaxas' book about him called Amazing Grace and the recent film that we all saw?
I'll ask him if he's collecting royalties on that.
Right. Okay. Well, what's the next recording that you'd like to take? And tell us why it's significant to you.
Well, in view of what I just said about William Wilberforce and the seriousness of that and the spiritual impact and eternal ramifications of that, my next recording would seem a little out of place, but it would be Desperado by the Eagles.
Oh, boy. It really is different. And what age were you when you heard that one?
You know how early I was married and had kids, so I was old enough to know better. But during the 70s, the early part of the 70s, I was just a huge Eagles fan. And some of their music, they were really, really, really good musicians, though a lot of people would take exception to maybe to them personally or some of the things that they might have stood for, but they make really good music.
Right. Now, some of our listeners may not ever have heard their music, but and some of us will need to be reminded. So now we're going to listen to a little bit of Desperado by the Eagles. Right, you've mentioned your two sons. Tell us a little bit more about them.
Evan and David. I'll jump ahead quickly and tell you that both of them are believers now, and that gives us a great deal of joy and a great deal of comfort. Hasn't always been that way. David came to know Christ. He's our second son. He came to know Christ when he was about 10 years old. Never strayed very far from that. Has pretty much lived out his faith since he was 10 years old. A few ups and downs, but nothing major. Evan, our older son, was a lot more like me in some ways and had to learn things the hard way oftentimes and actually didn't come to know Christ until about 9 years ago and went through some very difficult times before that. Has gone through some difficult times since then, in fact. But there's a huge difference. Evan is married, lives fairly close by, has 5 children. David is also married and has 3 children. And so both families are pretty close, one about 1.5 miles from us, the other about 20 miles from us. So we get fairly frequent contact with them.
8 grandchildren close by. That's really a blessing.
Yeah, it is. Most days, that's a great blessing.
What's the next book that you'd like to take to Scribbler's Den?
Stu Weber, Tender Warrior. I knew Stu before he wrote that book and knew that he was working on a book, but it was untitled. And he had a copy sent to me, and when I took it out of the box, I took it out slowly and saw the word tender, and then I saw the word warrior, and I didn't have to look any further because his life epitomizes both those words, tender and warrior. And does that? He explains what that looks like in a man from God's perspective. It's a book about being a man of God. Man, husband, father, friend, the tender side that's called for and the warrior side that's called for if we're to play out God's role for us.
That's intriguing. I'll have to get that one. Well, what was your next career move?
I mentioned starting off as in cost accounting and then moving into the computer field. And soon after my experience in Charlotte, in where I came to know Christ, we moved back to Greenville and I worked for Fluor. It was Daniel and then Fluor Daniel and then Fluor. But I worked for them in basically the same capacity that I had helped with the company in Charlotte. And then after a few years of that, I actually started a small software company called North American Computer Systems and then bought another small franchise that specialized in medical systems. And I ran that for a while, and then I sold that off when Brendan and I joined staff with Campus Crusade Executive Ministries.
This was application software?
Yes. The main package that I had, apart from the medical franchise that I bought, was a wholesale order entry distribution purchasing system. And I just sold that multiple times and customized it as needed. Did some custom work, but that package was my bread and butter.
What size companies were your customers?
Mostly mid-sized corporations. I had a chemical company in Charlotte, North Carolina, that makes some consumer products that are household names. The Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District, in fact, though they're not a wholesaler per se, all those schools in their systems are customers of their central purchasing and warehouse and distribution center. So
yeah, quite a logistics problem.
They do indeed. So that's the type company I was dealing with, companies and entities like school systems and so forth.
Okay. So how long were you in that software business?
About 4 years.
Okay. And what caused you to sell that and join Campus Crusade for Christ?
I really enjoyed what I did in business. It was fun, and it was changing constantly, which I like change. One of my favorite bumper stickers is, give me ambiguity or give me something else. And so I deal well with change, and the computer software field fit right in. So I really enjoyed what I did. I enjoyed getting to know about other companies and working with other companies. But Christ had done so much in my life and with our family that anything that I could do related to my walk with him, related to other people in whose lives he was working, just began to take precedence in my thinking over everything else. And I actually began to see him use me in other people's lives, bringing some people to the point of knowing him, others helping them grow in their understanding of what being a follower of his looked like every day instead of just Sunday, and actually saw him use some of the negative things in my background in a positive way relating to other people. And I was so taken by that that I just began to think more and more and more about that and how could I spend more time doing that. And
was part of that as a part-time volunteer with Campus Crusade? Or
actually, yes. The executive ministries group that was functioning here in Greenville, not by that name, but by that strategy, it was all volunteers. There were no staff here then. And just began to be involved with more of that and enjoying it more, seeing God use it more. I learned a lot of what I know through that executive ministries training of Campus Crusade. And just the more I saw God use that, the more I wanted to be involved in that. So Brenda was getting involved on the women's side at the same time and seeing the same kind of things happen. And so we just came to the point, we just started talking, this is what we want to do with our lives. And so we didn't think that in our position, that our kids the age they were, with all the situation as was, that would be possible for us. But God began to show us that it was, and so He led us in that direction and came to a point. I wanted to be sure if I walked away from a fairly good paying job with two teenage kids, getting one of them ready for college, I wanted to be sure that I wasn't making that up. And so God confirmed that in a number of ways. And so it was really easy then for us to make that break. Most ways it was easy. There were some difficulties involved in the process, but it became an easy decision.
So then did you make an application to Campus Crusade, or did they recruit you, or how does that happen?
Well, I had been involved as a volunteer and had gone to some of their national conferences and things like that, so I knew some of the people that were involved who were full-time staff and had some conversations with them. And actually, as a first step, I thought it would be the only step, we joined what Campus Crusade calls associate staff. And that's where you go away for their training. You commit to go every other year for a training conference, commit to spend so many hours per week involved in ministry, but you keep your job and make your living yourself. And so we had already done that as a first step. And so I knew the people and kind of knew the process. But that's what we planned to do forever, was stay on associate staff. And then when we came to the point of realizing that we felt God was leading us to go full-time, it made it a little bit easier. I actually called the associate national director and told him that we really wanted to explore the possibility of coming on full-time staff if they had a city that would be a good match for us that needed staff, and if there was a host couple, a volunteer couple who basically hosted the events and everything, that they thought we would work well with, that we were open to coming full-time.
And that was Greenville?
We were living here, involved here. In fact, when I called him and told him that, he said, well, I think we have somewhere that would be a great fit. And I said, great, where is that? And he said, well, I got a call yesterday from our host couple in one city. They don't have any full-time staff, and the ministry's going so well and growing so fast, so many things going on, that he said they've got to the point where they have to have staff, and I think you and Brenda would be a good fit. And I said, super, where is that? And he said, Greenville. So I didn't know that the host was making that call, and he didn't know that I was calling one day later to make it known that we wanted to come full-time. So it worked out. They left us right here in Greenville where we had been working as volunteers.
That's great. That's great. What would you say are your major continuing passions in your life, or your life's mission, in addition to the basic following Jesus?
I've given that some thought. I can be so scattered sometimes that I can look at 100 good things and want to be involved in all 100 of them. And so I've had to ask myself, what is it, where does God have me, and what does He want me to focus on, and what's most important? And so I've come to the point of believing that the driving purpose in my life should be and is getting to be making sure that I stay closely connected on a personal level with Jesus Christ, first and foremost, and continuing to grow as the husband that God wants me to be and that Brenda needs me to be, that I never lose sight of the children and grandchildren that God has entrusted to my care, and that I am available for God to use any way He wants in spreading His gospel and transforming lives and communities. And without staying focused on that, kind of in that sequence, there's so much going on that I know that I can get so busy that I overlook things, sometimes simple things, that I need to be doing with my sons and my daughters-in-law and my grandchildren, because they're not the ones that are screaming, can I come here and meet about that and do this other thing? And so I've had to really spend some time focusing in on what's God's purpose for my life.
Well, it seems like you've got a very good list there. Okay, after our last short break, we'd like to hear about your main work and your second visitor and what you'll put in the last chapter.
Hello, I'm Chris Doyle, the president of American Leprosy Missions. Although people in South Carolina do not often encounter leprosy, it is still a common disease in India. Let me tell you a touching story about a young woman with leprosy. Sarah is 20 years old. Her mother runs a small tea shop and earns the equivalent of a dollar a day. Sarah developed leprosy when she was 15. She did not respond well to the leprosy drugs, so she was given special drugs which are very expensive. On the mother's meager wages, they could not possibly afford the treatment. But thanks to generous donors, she got the drugs she needed. She will take the medicine for 1 year to be completely healed. When asked to complete the statement, "Leprosy has changed my life because," she answered, "I lost my school and I did not do well in my studies because of leprosy. My family would not talk to me and they did not care to visit me." She cries bitterly when she talks about this. The local leprosy hospital takes care of her medically while a local Christian mission agency ministers to her spiritually. Through their outreach, Sarah has given her heart to Jesus and believes that she will be well and continue to live normally. Sarah says, "When I came to this hospital, I had a lot of fear about what's going to happen to me. But when the mission team came to the hospital each week, I learned a lot of songs from them, which gave me comfort. I also got to know Jesus." Sarah is a very intelligent and determined young woman. She loves to embroider and do lace work. She loves to sing, too. She tells the caseworker that she is glad she came to the hospital because she has found the one true God. She had a defining moment. Sarah now has her own ministry. She encourages the other patients to attend the fellowships and has a great burden to share Jesus with her family. Her three prayer requests are complete healing, to get an education, and for her family to be saved. You can be a part of a defining moment in the life of someone with leprosy. Your gift of any amount will help us bring healing and hope to someone in need. Call us right now at 1-800-LEPROSY or visit us at leprosy.org. Call now and say you will help. Thanks for caring.
Welcome back to Defining Moments. We're talking with Tom Preston, the local leader of Campus Crusade for Christ, and formerly leading six international crusade ministries. Tell us about those international ministries. How long were you on staff here before you took on other responsibilities, and what were those?
The role I mentioned earlier, where Brent and I were working locally with executive ministries, was for about 8 years, and then we were asked to team up with another couple and help establish an international ministry that we called Embassy Executive Ministries International. It was to business and government leaders in other countries, and our territory was everywhere outside the U.S. and Canada. And so we spent the next 7 years in about 58 different countries helping plant indigenous ministries to business and government leaders.
All right. That was very successful then.
In some cases, not as much as we hoped. In some cases, far beyond anything we would have dreamed. We had some phenomenal things happen in several parts of the world. One of the most memorable that we were involved in repeatedly was some ministries in Eastern Europe right after the Iron Curtain fell. We were in there. We've been in Budapest 28 times. I've seen God do some phenomenal things there in Warsaw and Prague. And so that's one part of the world that stands out in our mind where we saw a lot happen during those years.
What were the other ministries besides that?
Well, actually, we were assigned to international staff with Crusade for those 7 years, and then I was asked to come back and give national leadership to executive ministries for a few years, and then was asked to head up a division of adult ministries that included six different ministries, executive ministries being one. Priority Associates was another. That was a ministry to young professionals, kind of the up-and-coming professional yuppie community, if you will. Life Builders is a one-on-one mentoring program that works with individuals and does a lot of work in churches. And they train people in churches how to take people one at a time through mentoring process. Another is Here's Life Inner City. It's what it sounds like. It's a ministry to the inner city poor in America. They work primarily with the storefront churches and with food agencies, clothing pantries and stuff like that, equipping them, helping them supply needs and equipping them in skills and in evangelism training. So they don't do a lot of direct ministry to the inner city poor. They're calling, if you will, is to help provide assistance to those who are in the inner city ministering permanently. And so they are in probably 30, 35 cities doing that. The other two are both Christian embassies. We have a Christian embassy at the United Nations in New York and the Christian embassy in Washington, D.C. And the Christian embassy in New York ministers to all the different agencies, the ambassadors and the different workers in the United Nations. The Christian embassy in Washington, D.C. works with the Pentagon, with presidential appointees in virtually all of the departments or cabinets, with Capitol Hill, and with the foreign diplomats to Washington from other countries.
Well, what about local activities? Are you involved in any other groups or anything here in Greenville?
I'm involved in several. One that I'm pretty passionate about is Greenville Connect. It's made up of churches, missions groups, and community business leaders who care about working together, cooperating, establishing partnerships, and strengthening each other in helping see that all of Greater Greenville has an opportunity to know Jesus Christ.
Are there programs that Greenville Connect does that people might have heard of?
There are a few projects that Greenville Connect initiates that some in your audience may be familiar with. One is last spring we had an all-day equipping conference up at North Greenville University for pastors and missions groups and so forth, and had a variety of topics covered to help equip those that are in the body of Christ to be more effective at what God calls them to do. And another project that some would be familiar with is a project called Boxes of Love, where we encourage sponsoring entities, like a sponsoring church, to partner with a distributing church. The thought being that the distributing church is the one that's in the community where there's greater need. They're there permanently. They're able to build relationships and to be there for the people, not just for a project or for a Thanksgiving food giveaway, but they're there permanently. And the benefit of asking a sponsoring church, and in some cases a company, to partner with them is that not only do they bring some resources to the table, bring volunteers to help, but we've seen that extend to ongoing relationships, ongoing partnerships, to where those two work together on an ongoing basis.
What is a box of love?
Well, it's a box of food.
Oh.
It's a Thanksgiving meal, a frozen turkey, and all the trimmings for a Thanksgiving meal, along with a Bible and an explanation of the gospel, in a box. It's given out the Saturday before Thanksgiving to families in the communities where there's generally greater need.
Mm.
It meets a need. It feeds a family of six a couple of meals. But it also is a tool to establish and strengthen relationships and oftentimes provide an opportunity to share the gospel.
How many churches are involved?
Last year, we started out with two churches, one sponsor and one distributor. The second year, we had four sponsors and four distributors. Last year, being our third year, we had 12 churches involved and did 1,200 boxes of food on that one Saturday.
All right. Now, how would a church that would want to participate in this get information and get involved?
The best way to learn about it is greenvilleconnect.org. Information's there. The contact information is there. They can then call one of the people involved in heading the project up, get more detail if they need it. But most of what they need to know is on greenvilleconnect.org.
Great. Well, I hope it's a big success in the coming year. It's not that far away now, is it?
It's getting closer. We're in the planning stages now and getting the different ones lined up who want to participate this year. So we're
Great.
In the process of that right now.
Who have you chosen for your second visitor to Scribbler's Den?
We've invited C.S. Lewis to show up. I'm probably not alone in that. There are probably a lot of people who would love to get about a half day alone with C.S. Lewis, but I'm among them. One of the reasons, one of the things I want to explore with him is that he was not a very conventional Christian.
That's true.
there's a lot of things about him that don't fit the mold, and yet there seems to be a great deal of evidence that he came face to face with the reality of the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ and embraced that wholeheartedly and entered into a permanent relationship with Christ. And I hear a lot of conventional wisdom and conventional thinking, and I love to hear unconventional thinking from people that I trust, have a relationship with Christ, and I trust that Lewis has a relationship with Christ and is enjoying that right now immensely and is yet a bit of a renegade. Mm. And I love sitting down with renegades who love Christ.
Absolutely. That's all true about him, I believe. Well, your book will have a last chapter. And can you tell us a little bit of what would be in that, your hopes for the future, the things that you'd most like your descendants or your successors to hear, or any other final words?
I would really like to go out still actively pursuing a closer walk with Christ and being obedient to whatever he has for me that day. After I'm gone, if my wife and my children and my grandchildren could honestly say that something about having me in their lives helped them in a positive way in knowing God, I would think that I had spent my time fairly well.
Well, I'm sure you have, and I'm sure there are many people who will say that about you and feel that about you. Tom Preston, thank you very much for sharing your life with us today. It's been enlightening and inspiring. Your life in the Lord's service, your witness to His power and His grace, and especially your burden for lost people, have been a blessing and encouragement to the body of Christ. We appreciate you, and we thank you again for all this time. And to all our listeners, you can hear this and past programs at definingmomentsradio.com. There you can also suggest someone to be interviewed, and you can send a comment about the program. That's definingmomentsradio.com. Thank you very much for joining us today, and please make a defining moment in the life of someone with leprosy by making that call or visiting leprosy.org today.
Next week's guest at Scribbler's Den will be Dr. Tony Beam, popular morning talk show host on AM 660, Vice President of Student Services, and Head of the Christian Worldview Center at North Greenville University. So tune to Christian Talk 660 next Sunday at 2 p.m. for his defining moment. Defining Moments is a production of Amici Media in conjunction with Altitude Audio. To suggest a person to be interviewed, email a brief description to subject@definingmomentsradio.com.
Hello, I'm Chris Doyle, President of American Leprosy Mission. We are proud to sponsor this exciting new radio program, Defining Moments. For over 100 years, ALM has been working to bring healing and hope to those affected by leprosy. Leprosy is a tragic disease that robs people of their dignity, usefulness, and self-worth. But you can make a difference, a defining moment, if you will, in the life of someone with leprosy. Help us deliver the cure. Call us today at 1-800-LEPROSY or visit our website at leprosy.org. Thanks for listening and for caring.